Welcome to the Skies We're Under podcast, hosted by me, Rachel Wright. This podcast is created by and for parents of people with disabilities and the many practitioners who support us. It's just for all of us who are trying to get from one end of the week to the other whilst bridging the gap between the life we expected and the one we're actually living. Hi, I'm Rachel, founder and director of Born at the Right Time, an organisation which supports parent carers, delivers CPD certified training to practitioners, and influences policymakers and providers. I'm a qualified nurse, the mum of a young man who loves music, swimming, has complex disabilities, and an unusual addiction to the game show Pointless. I wrote the memoir, The Skies I'm Under, and I'm thrilled you've joined us for another episode of the Skies We're Under podcast. Today, I'm joined by Sarah Clayton, the CEO of Simple Stuff Works, Postural Care Geek, mum of four, and the parent of a young woman who is the survivor of a brain tumour, who has medical complexities and learning disabilities. Making up the third corner of our triangle is Lucy Parr, the sea-loving, sweary vegan and assistant ed psychologist, who is the parent of a young man with a genetic condition, which means he lives with complex medical, behaviour and neurodivergent needs. We are delighted that on the podcast today, we have got Joanna Grace. She's the sensory engagement and inclusion specialist, a doctoral researcher, author, trainer, TEDx speaker, and the founder of the Sensory Projects. Joanna grew up at sea aboard a concrete boat designed and built by her parents. Once on land, her childhood and teenage years were typified by passionate interests and obsessions. The words Jo spoke today pierced me. I can't wait for you to hear them. Hello and welcome to season three, episode three of the Skies We're Under podcast. And I'm delighted to say that today is a full house. We have the three musketeers. Welcome Sarah Clayton and Lucy Parr. Weather check, ladies. How are we all today?
I'm all right, apart from the fact that I didn't know what month it was. I've been wandering around blaming the fact that it's January on how I feel. And Lucy's like, Sarah, it's February, and like more than a week in. I'm just like, oh, yeah. I'm all right. So well, I've been very brave. I've been like, I've done the thing that I have never, ever done, not since my babies were like babes in arms, and I've reduced my days at work.
Ooh, well done. We love that.
So have you reduced your days in work? Or have you reduced your work?
I've reduced my days in work, which feels a bit odd. And to be fair, this was my first week of starting it and I have been in on both of the days. I'm not supposed to. So I haven't got the hang of it yet, but stuff's blocked out of my diary. And like I have openly said to other people outside of my own head, I need to reduce my days a bit because I'm losing my mind, which I think is a good thing to have done.
Yeah.
Right. There's a woman who walks her dog and like, I am thinking a very specific woman and I just see her and I just think,
you've got your shit together.
And I'm hoping that like possibly by next week, that's what people will be thinking when they see me. So that's good.
Okay.
So we'll keep her.
Okay, so yeah. What are the criteria? So just so we know what we're measuring this standard of togetherness by, what are the criteria for that standard?
Looking like a Stepford wife, apparently.
That's it, exactly that. Having a mud daddy in the back of the car.
Yeah. Okay.
Not crying. Like the absence of crying, okay. You know. The absence of just vagueness. All of the time. So I'm just hoping that I've got a bit more headspace to actually think things through.
Lovely.
That's what I'm thinking.
Amazing.
I'll let you know how it goes.
Lucy, how are you?
So I think I'm going to keep it short and sweet. This kind of sums up my state of existence at the moment. I was walking down the high street and walking past the works. So I was walking past and I saw in the window a big poster saying top titties. And I was like, what? Excuse me, what? So I took a double take and actually it said top titles and I'd read it as top titties. And I was like, literally, that just sums up the state of my existence. I have no idea what that says about me or my perimenopausal state and my estrogen levels or just generally my cognitive function currently. So yeah, I'm just wading through treacle, I think, at the moment.
I kind of feel like I'm so capable and do lots of things so much of the time. And then I find myself in a situation where I realise it's all a fallacy. I realise that actually I'm still my insecure 12-year-old. It was brought up really obviously a couple of weeks ago when my son's big into Dungeons and Dragons, and he has Dungeons and Dragons games here and actually in the office, and then he goes to a friend's house. So he's at a friend's house. I'm a bit of a grumpy ass parent, and I make him cycle everywhere. Even if it's like late at night and stuff, he generally cycles. On this occasion, he'd cycled to his friend's house, and then it was really cold and it was really dark. I mean, it's dark or dark. So it was really cold. And I was like, oh, okay. I've been to the gym. I've been to a spin class. I'll go and I'll pick him up. But he doesn't know I'm going to pick him up. And I don't think about this being an issue until I'm driving to said friend's house. I pull up outside. My son's phone has died, so he doesn't have a battery, so I can't message him. And I'm suddenly like 12 again and think, I can't knock on this person's door. Honestly, I have a complete freeze. Aside from the fact that I look like a beetroot on legs because I've just done a spin class with a padded ass, I'm like, I can't go to this complete stranger's door. My son's in there. It's not like I think them axe murderers because I wouldn't have let him go in. But I am sitting outside in my car for about 10 minutes. And I'm texting my husband going, I don't know what to do. He's like, well, clearly you do know what to do. Just knock on the frigging door. I'm like, but I can't. What happens if they don't like me? What happens if my son? I'm going red thinking about it. What if he's embarrassed about me? What if the other boys don't like me? These boys come to my house every week. And still I'm panicked at the prospect. And I sat there for ages. And then I think what happened was, my son's got to charge his phone. So I was sending him text going, please, I really hope you read this because I'm just sitting outside the car. Can you possibly come outside? I don't really want to answer the door. Knock on the door. Please, can you come outside? And he managed to get a charge of his phone and then came out and just thought, absolute wally. It was a real pedestal moment where I absolutely went flat on my face in front of my 16-year-old who thought that up until then that maybe I was, you know, quite capable and did some stuff. Not at all, it seems. He suddenly had that realization that I am way more insecure than he ever is.
It's a really good job you weren't an American Girl Scout who had to go and sell boxes of cookies on people's doors. Do you remember that?
I would be shit at that
they
job.
Have to go and, yeah, you would. You would be absolutely shit.
My mum once made me, she went off on holiday and it happened to be, you know, Christian Aid Week.
Yeah.
So she had volunteered herself to do this whole estate. Yeah, this whole estate. She was going to do the Christian Aid envelopes and then went on holiday and left me with the list of streets that I had got to go and knock on, not just knock on people's door. I had to go knock on people's doors, pretend that I knew what Christian Aid Week was and ask them for money. I honestly, and she was just like, so? You'll be all right. You'll be okay. Hours I was out there.
That's a smart parent right there.
But this is it. But thinking exactly why I didn't just put 20 quid in an envelope and just, because that's about how much I got for my hours of walking.
I'm just sad that I'm not braver sometimes.
Yeah. But hey. Sometimes your bravery bucket is empty.
Yeah. But do you get it when you're going to school and stuff? Like, every time I leave the house to take my son to school, my first thought is, I hope it's not a non-pupil day and I don't know about it. My second thought is, I bet it's a non-uniform day or it's a thingy day and I've forgotten about it. And then I go through the, is it PE day or not? And until I'm like closer to the school and other people are walking, I'm like, feel like I'm the odd one out.
Yeah, but that's overload.
I have to be reassured.
No, that's just overload, I reckon. I think that is because we are constantly, like, have I remembered an appointment? Have I, like, the letters come and the have I remembered the medication? Have I remembered to pay the person? Have I done this, that, and the other? And it is pure overload. So then you just end up in a situation where you're constantly questioning yourself as to, like, what is the thing that I've forgotten to do? Because there will be something, you know? And yeah, it's just like, which thing is it? Which thing will it be? Will it be,
will it be something life-threatening?
Yes. Will it be an important thing?
Or will it just be that I forgot to take the salmon out the freezer?
Exactly those things. Exactly that.
For this week's episode, I interviewed Joanna Grace. Here we have Joanna. We don't know what we don't know, but this podcast is going to bring you the things that you need to know. And today we have the infamous, the eloquent, the wonderful Joanna Grace. I'm so excited you're here.
Thanks very much for having me on. I can only fall from such a high pedestal.
I've set you right up.
Yeah, thanks. Articulate's the worst one you said there.
Oh, you are. You are so good. Right. For people who have spent their life without you in it, which is a sad life as far as I can tell, can you tell people who you are and what you do?
So I'm Jo Grace. I run a thing called the Sensory Projects, and there's a lot of sensory projects, and I won't tell you all about them because you said 10 minutes, but they all work to contribute to a future where people are understood in spite of their differences. That's their overriding theme. And their other theme is that they're all inexpensive resources that you could muddle together in your kitchen or your shed, that, you know, are lovely and sensory and inclusive in all sorts of ways. And I'm also a doctoral researcher. I'm studying for a doctorate in identity and belonging for people with profound intellectual and multiple disabilities. So I have a background in inclusion that's older than me, because my mum and my grandma worked towards a more inclusive society in their own ways. And I have family members with physical disabilities and neurodivergent conditions, and I'm autistic, which you might spot in the keen interest in the sensory world and the acquisition of a weirdly large amount of knowledge about it. And I've worked as a special school teacher. I've been a registered foster carer for children with complex needs. And I've worked across education, supporting children with, described in our system as having special educational needs to be better included. And then since setting up the sensory projects, I get to work across the age range. So the youngest person I've worked with is a day old, and the oldest person is somewhere in her 80s, but it's rude to ask.
Fantastic. Okay. So with that perspective, because we all have perspectives and that wealth of knowledge, if you could plant some information in our brains, what would it be? What would you want us to know?
So the invite that you gave me was come on the podcast and tell parents of children with profound intellectual and multiple disabilities what they need to know. And you think, well, I'm not qualified to do that. There's absolutely no way. I almost turned you down. And I'm only here because I'm such a massive fan of the podcast. I was like, I want to be on The Skies We're Under. but no, I've no right to tell you anything. But I was thinking as I drove my kids to school, the biggest message I would want to say to parents of people with intellectual disabilities is to trust your instincts. Because your instincts are right. You know, almost 100% of the time your instincts are right, but the messaging around you very much undermines that. And I think I realized it when I was first setting up the Sensory Stories project. I write sensory stories, and sensory stories are ace, and I could tell you lots about sensory stories, but it's not as important as telling you to trust your instincts. So I do a lot of social media. I'm online more than I'm anywhere. And the backstage of my social media is probably where I have the most impact in the world, like the messages that I get and the little private conversations, the things that people share with you. It's a bit that stranger on the train situation. You know, you're not somebody they've met, and they can just type it all out to you one evening when they're worried. And they do. And I'm very, very grateful that people are willing to be vulnerable like that with me. But I remember getting a message from a lady who said, oh, my son's got a profound disability. Do you think sensory stories would be suitable for him? And I was like, yeah, yeah, they'd be great. Like, he's who they're for. And she said, oh, do you think I could tell him a sensory story? And I said, yeah, yeah, you just, you know, you just read the story and you share the sensory prompts that go with it. And she said, oh, it's just that I've not done it before. I was like, that's fine. You don't need to have done it before. It's like my stories are all resourced with things you'd have in your kitchen or your recycling bin. I moved house once with an ex-boyfriend and I moved my sensory resources that are in big boxes, crates that we keep in the shed. And I can swear on this podcast, can't you? He was going, yeah. Why are we moving? Why are we moving all these boxes of crap? And I was like, that's not crap. That's my job. You know, this is precious, precious stuff. He's like, this is other people's recycling, Joe. And I'm like, no, but look at how sparkly the blanket is. You know, it's all just stuff that other people think. I was like, of course you can do it. You've probably got everything you need already. And she said, oh, it's just that I haven't had training in how to do it. And I said, well, I deliver training, but you don't need it. Like, you just read the sentence and share the thing. And she kept on going. And eventually she said, oh, I might try. And can I show you what I do? And she recorded herself and sent it to me. And I was like, yeah, that's great. And we back and forth for probably a year as I reassured her that she was reading a story to her child, right? And you think, what world is a parent growing up in where what you've experienced from professionals before is that you can't do something as simple as read a story to your child unless you've been trained, unless you're qualified, unless... And I think what happens is that when you have a baby that's born with, you know, a label or a condition or something, or indeed a baby that acquires it, when my babies were born, and they're both reasonably normal, not entirely. One of them is bizarrely, one of them is severely neurotypical. And when they're
severely
born...
Severely neurotypical. Oh, have you had any special groups that you can go to?
It's so strange because my first child is most likely autistic like me, but I didn't spot it because obviously he seems normal to me because I'm autistic. But the second one, he came out of nursery when he was two and he said to me, Neve's sad today, mummy. And I said, was she? Because the first one wouldn't have known that anybody else had an emotional landscape at all. And it's nine and still doesn't really. And Neve's sad today. And I said, oh, was she? Why was she sad? He's like, she's not allowed to eat the leaves. I was like, no, no, you're not allowed to eat the leaves, are you? And so he not only knew that she was sad, he knew why she was sad. And I was listening to this story, thinking how tragic to be Neve and to not be allowed to eat the leaves. And he said, I kiss her, mummy. I make her happy. And he's like, oh, my goodness, you knew what to do about it. I hadn't even got to there in my adult head and he's already. But my point was, when my children were born, I was the expert in them from the get-go. There was nobody who knew more about them than me. But when your children are born, immediately you meet somebody who already knows a lot about the condition or about the, you know, the need for splints or about buccal midazolam, or, and there's instantly a world of people who are more qualified in your child than you are. And it seeps through into everything and it undermines your trust in your instincts. My gut instincts about my child are spot on, and your gut instincts about your children are spot on. And through my time at the Sensory Projects and through those backstage messages and through listening to people at conferences and meeting families, it's horrible how many stories I have of people's instincts not being listened to and not being reacted to by the professionals. Because I'm a big research geek. I'm not just saying it as a pleasantry. It's like, it's there in the research. Your gut instinct as to whether your child is in pain or something like that is better than any of the ways that we have for measuring pain. And if you're a professional listening, it's our job to to ask for people's instincts and to amplify them and to validate them and go, yeah, these instincts count. So that was my number one one.
I mean, I can't speak.
Sorry. It's rubbish. It's just shabby what happens to families.
Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Sorry. Here to make you cry.
It's just so true. It's so, yeah, I was actually talking to somebody before the podcast, somebody who's a learning disability consultant, and we were talking about empowerment programs for parents. And you might have read stuff that I've written about it, but this whole idea that there are these empowerment programs springing up everywhere from universities, and fantastic things like, you know, giving people the language and giving people like understanding of the systems and things that are really important. But the only reason we need to be empowered is because someone else took our power away in the first place. Like that's the only reason we need to be empowered as parents, is because we were first disempowered by the system that was supporting our children.
It's like running a training program to teach young Black children how to better fight racism, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. It's not, it shouldn't be your, like, yes, it will help them, but
it might
it's
stop
not.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they might be better able to argue for what should be theirs, but it shouldn't be them that's receiving
the
training.
It's not their responsibility.
Yeah,
no.
It's not on you.
Listen, what we're going to do is we're going to pause out there, and you're just going to have to come back for next week's episode if you're listening to the podcast, and you're going to have to hear the gem that is the wisdom of Joanna Grace next week. But first, you can hear the rest of us discuss Jo's wisdom and see how quickly it takes for us all to cry. Okay, ladies, did you feel as much of a mess listening to that interview as I clearly was at the time of talking to her?
Because Lucy and I get to see the interview as well as hear the interview. Like my heart was breaking because I could see your little face gradually just, I just was, you know, when you just want to reach out and just give somebody a cuddle. It was really moving. And I think what you were talking about in terms of disempowerment and just that sense of helplessness and that leads to hopelessness or can lead to hopelessness. It's just so bloody hard. What did you reckon, Luce?
Yeah, I found it a really tricky watch, and I felt exactly the same. Just wanted to kind of reach out and give you a hug and say it's all going to be okay. But actually, even saying that, we know as parents, not necessarily all going to be okay. And I think for me, that it really struck a chord. Joanna talked about trust your instincts, but there's this real conflicting agenda of trusting your instincts and the agenda of everybody else around you trying to put it on you that actually they're the professionals, they're the experts, you don't know what you're talking about. And the bit where she talked about, you know, you have a baby that comes into the world and suddenly everyone is more an expert in your baby than you, and what that does to you as a parent. And I think I guess for me, it's not, I was thinking about me and you, Rachel, and the differences, because for you, your son was your first son who had kind of profound and complex needs. Whereas,
and it was straight away.
Straight away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My child was my third child and I'd already had the experience of parenting two typical children. I mean, there were differences, and we've talked about that before, that I was quite young and just shouted down a lot by professionals and all of that stuff. But very different, because I imagine had I not had those two previous experiences of parenting typical children, I did trust my instincts more than I think I would have had I had Reckon as a first child. And so I wonder whether that would have made a difference as well. I don't know what you thought about that in terms
and
of
it's, you had
your
a very
journey.
Evolving picture as well, didn't you? Like, although he has a genetic condition, so it was always there. But as far as the apparentness of what that meant for him. It was immediately a bit of a rocky start, but then it looked fairly typical, whereas there was nothing very, and I guess I kidded myself. I was naive to think that, you know, to hope potentially that things were okay for a while, but then the brain scan showed at 10 weeks that things were very not all right. And I think I realized talking to Joe and maybe reflecting since then that it wasn't just that it was down to the professionals either, that I think I had a narrative in with my own head. I'm going to say this. I'm not going to say this without crying. I think I had a narrative in my own head that that I was worried that I was that I was partly responsible for the injury that occurred to him while I carried him, and therefore I couldn't be trusted. Like, if I couldn't be trusted to carry him and deliver him safely, then could I be trusted from then on? So maybe there was, it wasn't all on the voices of the people around me, but my own internal narrative very much said, you fucked this up from the very beginning. Sorry, Dad. You stuffed this up from the very beginning. And therefore, you're going to spend the rest of your life trying to make it better, or you need to get all the best information to sort this out.
I completely, 100%, Rachel, get that. Because I did the whole thing. We did 5 months of misdiagnosis and I went along with that. So whenever I hear about trust your instincts, I think, well, you might trust your instincts, but my instincts are decidedly shit. Because I know that my instincts are very, very heavily influenced by fear and hope. I mistrust them. But I've come, when I was listening to Joe talking, I came to us like a slightly different kind of conclusion that I hadn't really come to before. Because listening to it was recognizing that trust your instincts doesn't mean you are always right or that you always know the answer. Trust your instincts is, you know, there is something, you know, there's something in your gut that's like, this isn't quite right, but it doesn't mean that you have to know what it is. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to know, well, I know the answer to it because I am the parent. It just means there is something here that I need to get some help with. There's something here that I need to advocate for my child for. And it just was like a little revelation, a little light bulb moment listening to Joe, because it was just, trust your instincts is different to the parent is always right. You know, because, and in my, I'd got the two mixed up in my head, because I'd got like, well, I was wrong. But I did know there was something wrong.
And the trust your instincts is actually about being vocal about your curiosity, about being able to put your finger on not letting things lie.
Yeah. And that's
potentially.
I think there are so many parallels to so many parents out there who have at the root of that insecurity that Joe was talking about, they have a sense of responsibility for the situation they find themselves in. So I think of it of like learning to dance. So if you, having a baby is just like your basic Macarena. Yeah. So like everybody, I know what the Macarena, I've got a vague idea of the Macarena and I know, I know the music and I've seen other people do it. And I've spotted them and I've watched them and I've thought, could I do that? And I've tried to have a go myself, maybe, you know. And then what we've been left with is like the bloody Argentine tango in massive heels with like a, and you just go, I signed up for the bloody Macarena. I didn't. This was not on the cards.
You've absolutely nailed it.
But The thing is, with professionals and practitioners, is they chose to learn how to dance. They chose the spandex. They chose the sequin, all right? I didn't. I am a reluctant partner. I wanted to do the Macarena. I was perfectly happy there. I don't want to do this higher level stuff. And the professionals get to take their heels off at the end of the day. And I don't. And I will probably carry on dancing forever and ever and ever.
The only other thing that I really thought when I was listening to Jo talking was that she said, you know, when your baby is born and the baby's typical, you're trusted. And I thought, I wonder how much that is the experience of people who are in minority ethnic groups and who are in Romani communities or, you know, traveller communities or, you know, or have learning disabilities themselves. Like we're three white middle class, whether you like it or not, Lou, sorry, with this privilege. There's absolute privilege that we have, that we are trusted with a level of knowledge. And I don't think that's the experience of lots of people who meet services. And so some of the struggles that we have had in dealing with the system and services and professionals is the intersectionality of the kind of the complexity, the added barriers, the added, you know, the racism, that kind of trust to do the right thing, to have a good instinct, actually is completely through the lens of how people perceive us to be worthy of and suitable. And that is unfortunately sort of tainted by biases and isms, whatever that ism might be.
Not the same as racism, obviously, but a different experience for me was being treated like I was stupid because I was young when I had children. Mm-hmm. And that is completely my experience, that actually I had to fight and fight and fight and fight had I been a different social status.
If you'd been you now.
Yeah, be fine, right? But because I was like 20, 21, 22, however old, you know, Brecken was born when I was 23 and I had two kids already. So it's, they just looked at me and went, yeah, you're overreacting. You don't, like, he's fine. And luckily I did have a strong, I trust my instincts, there's something wrong. Mm. And like you said, we don't necessarily know what that is. And I didn't know what mm-hmm. that was. And I was completely upfront about that. I was like, I don't know what's wrong with him yet. Like the phrase of trusting your instincts and parent as expert, those can be mutually exclusive. Mm. Like I can trust my instinct and I am not the expert. Both yes. are true in the same sentence. And that I think is what is missed potentially by services, by, you know, they're like all or nothing. Well, you're either you know it all or, you know, you trust us and we do it all. It's like, no. Like I trust my instincts, but I am not the expert.
This is the last part of the show where we get to hear someone who has phoned in and left a message for us. And today we have the wonderful Rochelle.
Hey, Rachel and the Skies Runners team. It's Rochelle here. And I've got a little bit of a, is it just me? So to set the scene, Zachariah has been very poorly with pneumonia recently. And after a little bit of a stay in hospital, we came home, did the rest of the recovery, and then he went back to school. Before he went back to school, I decided to do a reset on his bedroom. Whenever he's been poorly, we like to do a bit of a deep clean to make sure that we've got rid of the bugs. You know, we air out the room and get all the cleaning products out and things like that and do a bit of an extra sort out. This time round, I guess I got a little bit excited. I had a little bit of energy. Where does it come from? Who knows where this energy came from? But I decided to reorganise his bedroom and label everything. So even though you can tell that there's continence pads peeping out of a box, I still had to label it pads and wipes. Because why not? Because apparently I have all the energy in the world. And despite having many sleepless nights, and sleeping on plastic chairs and sofas. You know, I have the energy to do it. Is it just me?
Is it just Rochelle, ladies?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, no.
No, no. It's when you get to that point where all of their stuff is in the corridor outside, you know, like kind of outside of the room.
Oh, mate.
Why have I started? Oh, yeah. Bless her. Cotton socks.
Oh, no, I'm not like that. Absolutely not. I would just go and eat ice cream and be like, no, fuck that. I'm not doing anything. Nothing.
No, see, I think Sarah and I are the same on this. If I'm stressed about something, if I'm really busy, that's the time that I will do the photo Christmas card. If I am really stressed, I will add to that umpteen. Like, I will be like, this is the time I need to do this thing on my to-do list that's been there for 4 years.
Yeah, and there is robust psychology under that, to be fair. You know,
what's
like
the robust psychology?
Everything's going to shit, so you do something you know you have control over. Yeah. Because it makes you feel like you have a locus of control. Yep. Where everything else is just going to shit. So, you know, it's a tried and tested coping strategy.
And psychology-wise, sure. Then, so... Because I obsess with the ironing and the folding, because if that's all, if it's neat. All folded properly and it's mm-hmm. neat, then we're all safe and we're fine. Is mm-hmm. there psychology around like the prioritisation of that above things like feeding the children?
I think there, Sarah, there are no extraneous factors that can mess up your ironing. Feeding the children, however... Many extraneous factors, it can all go wrong. Like, you cook something the kids don't like, they throw it on the floor. It's all, you know, you burn the toast because you're doing other things. So you will always go to things that you know you have full control over, where there are no extraneous factors, where it's very safe and nice, and you know that you're going to get the fucking folding done and nobody will stop you.
I'm so pleased.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled. I'm more thrilled about that than I've been about a lot of things for a long time. And when this is finished, I'm going to send you a photo of downstairs, because I have been this week trying. I've been washing stuff so that I know I'm going to be able to do the ironing. Like, stuff that doesn't really need washing, I have washed it so I can iron it and put it away. That's where I'm at.
Oh, thank you for calling in, Rochelle. And you're not alone. It's not just you. But yes, please do contact us at the podcast. There's lots of ways you can send in voice notes via email. There's SpeakPipe. You can send us DMs, messages through Instagram at Born at Right Time. And you have our email address, which is tswupodcast@gmail.com. That's tswupodcast@gmail.com. It has been fantastic. Sarah and Lucy, thank you so much for coming again. You are amazing as ever.
As are you, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Bye. The Skies We're Under podcast is a Born at the Right Time production with the expert audio assistance of Be Heard. Thanks to our guests for sharing their stories, expertise and very precious time. And with special thanks to the extravagant sponsors of the podcast. We'd love it if you could review, rate and share the podcast with fellow parents and practitioners. You can also join the conversation by sending in your stories, comments, questions and reasons to celebrate to tswupodcast@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Instagram at Born at Right Time. We love you joining us for the ride as we hurtle along this off-piste version of parenting. It's so much better when we do it together, whatever skies we're under.